definitely took courage to face. Methodically, he listed the evidence that something was wrong under sheet number 3. Number 1. Blinding light back at Baja. The trance he'd entered just before the meeting at the information center was the last deep one he'd had. He had been awakened from it by an apparent psychological artifact, a blueness that cut through his hypnotic state like a searchlight. But whatever warning his subconscious must have been sending was interrupted when Kulla approached. Number 2. Uncontrolled use of Mr. Hyde. Jacob knew that the bifurcation of his mind into normal and abnormal parts was a temporary solution at best to a long-range problem. A couple of hundred years ago, his state would have been diagnosed schizophrenic, but hypnotic transaction, supposedly, would allow his divided halves to reassemble peacefully under the guidance of his dominant personality. The occasions in which his feral other half pushed through or took control would logically be when it was needed, when Jacob had to revert to the cold, hard, supremely confident meddler he once had been. Jacob hadn't been worried earlier about his other side's exploits, so much as embarrassed. For instance, it was logical enough to pilfer samples of Dr. Kepler's pharmacopoeia on the Bradbury, given what he'd seen so far, although other means to the same ends might have been preferable. But some of the things he'd said aboard the Sunship to Dr. Martine, they implied either a great deal of justified suspicion churning around in his unconscious, or very deep problems down below. Number 3. Behavior on Sunship. Attempted suicide? That one hurt less than he thought it would when he wrote it. Jacob felt disconcerted by the episode, but strangely, he felt more angry than ashamed, as if he had been made to act like a fool by somebody else. Of course, that could mean anything, including frantic self-justification, but it didn't feel that way. Jacob felt no internal resistance when he probed that line of reasoning, only negation. Number 3 could have been part of an overall pattern of mental decay, or it might have been an isolated case of disorientation, as diagnosed by Dr. Martine, who since landing had been chasing him all over the base in order to get him into therapy. Or it could have been induced by the something external, as he had already considered. Jacob pushed back from the workbench. This would take time. The only way to get anything done would be to take frequent breaks and let ideas filter up from the unconscious, the very unconscious he was investigating. Well, that wasn't the only way, but until he had solved the question of his own sanity, he wasn't about to try the other means. Jacob stepped back and began to move his body slowly in the pattern of relaxing positions known as Tai Chi Chuan. The vertebrae in his back crackled from sitting awkwardly on the stool. He stretched and allowed energy to return to parts of his body that had fallen asleep. The light jacket he wore bound his shoulders. He stopped the routine and took it off. There was a coat rack by the chief mechanic's office, across the maintenance shop and near the drinking fountain. Jacob walked over to the rack lightly on the balls of his feet, feeling taut and energized by the Tai Chi. The chief mechanic nodded grumpily when Jacob passed by. The man was obviously unhappy. He sat behind his desk in the foam-paneled office, wearing an expression Jacob had seen a lot of since coming back, especially among the lower echelons. The reminder pricked Jacob's bubble. As he bent over the drinking fountain, Jacob heard a clattering sound. He lifted his head as it repeated, coming from the direction of the ship. Half of the ship was now visible from where he stood. As he walked to the corner of the rock wall, the rest came slowly into view. Slowly, the wedge-shaped door of the Sun Ship descended. Kulla and Bubba Cub waited at the bottom. holding a long cylindrical machine between them. Jacob ducked behind the rock wall. Now what are those two doing? He heard the catwalk extend from the rim of the sun-ship's deck, then the sound of the pill and pring pulling the machine up into the ship. Jacob rested his back against the rock wall and shook his head. This was too much. If he was given just one more mystery, he'd probably really flip out. That is, if he hadn't already. It sounded like an air compressor was being used inside the ship, or a vacuum cleaner. Clattering and sliding and occasional squeaky, peeling oaths implied that the machine was being dragged all over the interior of the ship. Jacob gave in to temptation. Bubba Cub and Culla were inside the ship, and no one else was in sight. In any event, there was probably nothing to be lost by being caught spying but the rest of his reputation. He bounded up the springy catwalk in a few powerful steps. Near the top of the ramp, he flattened and looked inside. The machine was a vacuum cleaner. Bubba Cub pulled it, his back to Jacob, as Culla manipulated the long, rigid suction member at the end of its flexible hose. The pring shook his head slowly, his dentures chattering softly. Bubba Cub shot off a series of sharp yaps at his client, and the chattering increased. But Culla worked faster. This was most queer and disturbing. Culla was apparently vacuuming the space between the deck and the curving ship's wall. Nothing existed there but the force fields that held the deck in place. Culla and Bubba Cub disappeared around the central dome as they made their way around the rim. At any moment, they'd be coming around the other side and facing him this time. Jacob slid back down the ramp a few feet, then descended the rest of the way on foot. He walked back to the apse and sat again on the stool in front of the slips of paper. If there was only time. If the central dome had been bigger or Bubba Cub's work slower, he might have found a way to get down into that force field gap and get a sample of whatever they were collecting. Jacob shuddered at the thought, but it would have been worth a try. Or even a picture of Culla and Bubba Cub at work. But where could he get a camera in the few minutes he had left? There was no way to prove that Bubba Cub was up to mischief, but Jacob decided that Theory 2B had received a big boost. On a piece of paper he scribbled, "Bees dust, or whatever. Hallucinogen released on board ship?" He threw it on that pile, then hurried over to the chief mechanic's office. The man grumbled when Jacob asked him to come along. He claimed that he had to sit by his phone and said he couldn't imagine where a regular still camera could be found nearby. Jacob thought the fellow was lying, but he had no time to argue. He had to get to a phone. There was one set on the wall near the corner where he watched Culla and Bubba Cub climb the ramp. But as he raised it, he wondered who he could call and what he could say. "Hello, Dr. Kepler. Remember me, Jacob Demois, the guy who tried to kill himself on one of your sunships?" "Yeah, well, I'd like you to come down here and watch Pill Bubba Cub do spring cleaning." No, that wouldn't do. By the time anyone got down here, Culla and Bubba Cub would be gone, and his call would be another item on his list of public aberrations. That thought struck Jacob. Did I just imagine the whole thing? There was no sound of a vacuum cleaner now, only silence. The whole thing was so damnably symbolic, anyway. From around the corner came a squeal, pealing curses, and a clattering of falling machinery. Jacob closed his eyes for a moment. The sound was beautiful. He risked a peek around the edge. Bubba Cub stood at the bottom of the ramp holding one end of the vacuum cleaner, the bristles around his eyes jutting starkly on end, and his fur stuck out in a ruff around his collar. The pill glared at Culla, who fumbled with the catch of the machine's dust bag. A small pile of red powder leaked from the opening. Bubba Cub snorted in disgust as Culla scooped handfuls of powder together and then turned the reassembled machine on the pile. Jacob was sure a handful went, instead of to the pile, into the pocket of Culla's silvery tunic. Bubba Cub kicked the remaining dust around until it blended with the floor. Then, after a furtive glance on all sides that sent Jacob's head jetting back behind the wall, he barked a quick command and led Culla back to the elevators. When he returned to the workbench, Jacob found the chief mechanic looking over the scattered sheets of his morphological analysis. The man looked up when he approached. "What was that all about?" He pointed his chin toward the sunship. "Oh, nothing," Jacob answered. He chewed on his cheek gently for a moment. "Just some ETs messing around with the ship."
"With the ship?" The chief mechanic came erect. "Is that what you were jabbering about before? Why the hell didn't you say so?"
"Wait, hold up." Jacob held the man's arm as he turned to hurry to the sunship cradle. "It's too late, they're gone. Besides, figuring out what they're up to will take more than just catching them in the act of doing something strange. Strangeness is what ETs are best at, anyway." The engineer looked at Jacob as if for the first time.
"Yeah," he said slowly. "You have a point. But maybe now you'd better tell me what you saw."
Jacob shrugged and told the whole story, from hearing the sound of the hatch opening to the comedy of the spilled powder.
"I don't get it."
The chief mechanic scratched his head. "Well, don't worry about it. Like I said, it'll take more than one clue to get this buttock beeper placed." Jacob sat again on the stool and began scribbling carefully on several sheets. "C. Has sample of powder. Y. Dangerous to ask him to share. Is C. willing accomplice? For how long? Get a sample."
"Hey, what are you doing here anyway?" the chief mechanic asked.
"I'm chasing clues." After a moment of silence, the man tapped the sheets at the far right of the table.
"Boy, I couldn't be so cold-blooded about it if I thought I was going nuts. What did it feel like? I mean, when you went swacko and tried to drink poison?"
Jacob raised his eyes from his writing. There was an image, a gestalt. The smell of ammonia filled his nostrils, and a powerful throbbing beat at his temples. It felt as if he had spent hours under the glare of an inquisitor's spotlight. He remembered the image vividly. The last thing he saw before he collapsed was Bubba Cub's face. The small black eyes stared at him below the brow of the Psi helmet. Alone of those aboard, the pill watched impassively as Jacob lurched forward and fell to the deck, senseless, a few feet away. The thought made Jacob grow cold. He started to write it down, but then stopped. This was too big. He jotted a short note in Pigeon Dolphin Trinary and threw it on pile four. "I'm sorry," he looked up at the chief engineer. "Were you saying something?" The engineer shook his head.
"Oh, it was none of my business anyway. I shouldn't have butted my nose in. I was just curious what you were doing here."
The man paused for a moment.
"You're trying to save the project, aren't you?"
he finally asked.
"Yes, I am." "And you must be the only one of the hot shots who is," he said bitterly. "I'm sorry I growled at you earlier. I'll stay out of your way so you can work."
He started to move away. Jacob thought for a moment. "Would you like to help?" he asked. The man turned.
"What do you need?"
Jacob smiled.
"Well, for starters, I could use a broom and a dustpan." "Coming right up,"
The chief mechanic hurried away. Jacob drummed his fingers on the tabletop for a moment. Then he gathered the scattered sheets and stuffed them back into his pocket. Chapter 18. Focus.
The director said no one was supposed to go in there, you know.
Jacob looked up from his work.
Gosh, Chief, he grinned savagely. I didn't know that. I'm just trying to pick this lock for my health.
The other man shifted nervously where he stood and mumbled about never having expected to be involved in a burglary. Jacob rocked back. The room swayed, and he touched the plastic leg of the table next to him for balance. In the dim light of the photo lab, it was hard to see straight, especially after 20 minutes of close work with tiny tools.
I've told you before, Donaldson, he said slowly. We have no choice.
What have we that we can show anyone? A patch of dust and a cockeyed theory? Use your head. We're caught, 2-2, as it is. They won't let us near the evidence because we haven't the evidence to prove we need it.
Jacob rubbed at the muscles at the back of his neck.
No, we're going to have to do this ourselves. That is, if you want to hang around.
The chief mechanic grunted. You know I'll stay.
His tone was hurt.
Okay, okay.
Jacob nodded. Apologies. Now, will you please hand me that small tool over there?
No, the other one with the hook on the end.
That's right.
Now, why don't you go over to the outer door and keep a lookout? Give me some time to clean up if someone comes, and watch out for that tripfall.
Donaldson moved away a small distance, but he stayed to watch as Jacob went back to work. He rested against the cool side of one of the door jambs and wiped perspiration from his cheeks and eyebrows. Demois seemed rational and reasonable, but the wild path his imagination had taken in the last few hours left Donaldson dizzy. The worst part was that it all hung together so well. It was exciting, this hunt for clues, and what he'd found out before meeting Demois here supported the man's story, but it was also frightening. There was always the chance that the guy really was crazy, in spite of the consistency of his argument. Donaldson sighed. He turned away from the tiny sounds of scraping metal and the nodding of Jacob's bushy head, and walked slowly toward the outer door of the photo lab. It didn't really matter. Something was rotten under Mercury. If someone didn't act soon, there wouldn't be any more sunships. A simple tumbler lock for a ridged and slotted key. Nothing could be easier. In fact, Jacob could not have helped noticing that Mercury had few modern locks. Electronics required shielding on a planet where the magneto sheath grazed across the bare, unprotected surface. It wasn't very expensive to shield, but still someone must have thought such an expenditure ridiculous for locks. Who would want to break into the inner photo lab anyway? And who would know how? Jacob knew how. But that didn't appear to be helping. Somehow it didn't feel right. The tools weren't speaking to him. He felt no continuity from his hands to the metal. At this rate, it could take all night. Let me do it. Jacob gritted his teeth and slowly pulled the rake out of the lock. He laid it down. Stop personifying, he thought. You're nothing but a set of asocial habits I've put under hypnotic lock for a while. If you keep acting like a separate personality, you'll get us... me... into a full-blown schizophrenic state. Now look who's personifying. Jacob smiled.
I shouldn't be here. I should have stayed home for the full 3 years and finished my mental house-cleaning in peace and quiet. The behavior patterns I wanted, needed to keep submerged, are now needed wide awake by my job.
Then why not use them?
When this mental arrangement was set up, it wasn't supposed to be rigid. That sort of suppression would really lead to trouble. The amoral, cold-blooded, savant qualities leaked out in a steady stream, though usually under complete control. It had been intended that they be available in an emergency. The suppression and personification by which he'd reacted to that stream lately may have caused some of his problem. His sinister half was to sleep as he worked off the trauma of Tanya, not be severed off at the wrist. Then let me do it. Jacob picked another rake and rolled it in his fingers. The light slip of tool steel felt smooth, cool. Shut up, you're not a person, just a talent, unfortunately linked to a neurosis, like a well-trained singing voice that can only be used while standing naked on a stage. Fine, use the talent. The door could be open by now. Jacob carefully laid his tools down and shuffled forward until his forehead rested against the door. Should I? What if I did flip out on the sunship? My theory could be wrong. And then there's that blue flash back at Baja. Can I risk opening up if something's gone loose inside? Weak from indecision, he felt the trance begin to fall. With an effort, he stopped it, but then with a mental shrug, allowed it to proceed. At the count of seven, a barrier of fear blocked him. It was a familiar barrier. It felt like the edge of a precipice. He consciously brushed it aside and continued down. At 12, he commanded, "This shall be temporary." He felt assent. The back count was done in an instant. He opened his eyes. A tingle wandered down the length of his arms and entered his fingers, suspiciously, like a dog returning, sniffing to an old home. So far, so good, Jacob thought. I feel no less ethical, no less me. My hands don't feel as if they're controlled by an alien force, only more alive. The lock-picking tools weren't cool when he picked them up. They felt warm, like extensions of his hands. The rake slid sensuously into the lock and caressed the tumblers as the torque bar pulled. One after another, tiny click telegraphed along the metal. Then the door was open.
"You did it!"
Donaldson's surprise hurt a little. "Of course," was all he said. It was reassuringly easy to squelch the insulting reply that popped into his mind. So far, so good. The genie seemed benign. Jacob swung the door wide and entered. Filing cabinets lined the left wall of the narrow room. Along the other wall, a low table supported a row of photoanalysis machines. At the far end, an open door led to the unlit and seldom used chemical darkroom. Jacob began at one end of the row of filing cabinets, bending to look at labels. Donaldson worked along the bench. It wasn't long before the chief mechanic said, "I found them." He pointed to an open box next to a viewing machine halfway down the table. Each spool was held in a padded niche, its sides inscribed with the date and times covered, and a code for the instrument that made the recording. At least a dozen niches were empty. Jacob held several cassettes to the light. Then he turned to Donaldson. "Someone's been here first and pilfered every cassette we wanted."
"Stolen? But how?"
Jacob shrugged. "Maybe the way we did it, by breaking an entry. Or maybe they had a key. All we know is that the final spool for each recording device is missing." They stood for a moment in dark silence.
"Then we haven't got any proof at all," Donaldson said.
"Not unless we can track down the missing spools."
"You mean we should bust into Bubba Cub's rooms, too?" I don't know. If you ask me, those data are burned by now. Why would he keep them around?
No, I suggest we sneak out of here and let Dr. Kepler or Dr. Da Silva discover the fact that they're missing by themselves. It's not much, but they may see it as slight evidence to support our story.
Jacob hesitated. Then he nodded. Let me see your hands, Jacob said. Donaldson presented his palms up. The thin coating of flex plastic was intact. They were probably safe from chemical and fingerprint tracing then.
Okay, he said. Let's put everything back in its place, as exactly as you can remember it. Don't disturb anything you haven't already touched. Then we'll leave.
Donaldson turned to comply, but then there was a crash as something fell in the outer photo lab. The sound carried, muffled through the door. The trap Jacob had set by the hall door had gone off. Someone was in the outer lab. Their escape route was blocked. The two men hurried back into the dim doorway of the darkroom. They made it around the corner of the light trap maze just as the sound of a metal key scratching at the lock carried across the narrow room. Jacob heard the door sigh open slowly over the subjective roar of his own rapid breathing. He patted the pockets of his overalls. Half of his burglar tools were out there on top of one of the filing cabinets. Fortunately, his dentist's mirror wasn't. It was still in his breast pocket case. The intruder's footsteps clicked softly in the room a few feet away. Jacob carefully weighed the hazards against the potential benefits, and then slowly eased the mirror out. He knelt and poked the round, shiny working end into the threshold, a few inches above the floor. Dr. Martine stooped in front of a filing cabinet, sorting through a ring of metal keys. Once, she shot a furtive glance toward the outer door. She looked agitated, though it was hard to tell from the image in the tiny mirror, jiggling on the floor 2 meters from her feet. Jacob felt Chief Donaldson leaning over above and behind him, trying to peek past the doorway. Irritated, he tried to wave the man back, but Donaldson overbalanced instead. His left hand shot out for support and landed on Jacob's back. Oof! The air expelled from Jacob's lungs as the chief engineer's weight fell on him. His teeth jarred as he took the full force through his stiffened left arm. Somehow, he kept them both from collapsing into the doorway. But the mirror fell out of his hand and onto the floor with a tiny clink. Donaldson slid backward into the dimness, breathing heavily, pathetically trying to be quiet. Jacob smiled wryly. Anyone who hadn't heard that debacle had to be deaf.
Who's there?
Jacob stood and brushed himself off deliberately. He cast a brief, disdainful glance at Chief Donaldson, who sat glumly and avoided Jacob's eyes. Quick footsteps receded in the outer room. Jacob stepped out into the doorway.
Wait a minute, Millie.
Dr. Martine froze mid-step at the door, her shoulders hunched as she turned slowly, her face a mask of fear, until she recognized Jacob. Then her dark, patrician features washed deep red.
What the hell are you doing here?
Watching you, Millie. An enjoyable pastime, usually, but now especially interesting.
You were spying on me, she gasped.
Jacob walked forward, hoping Donaldson would have enough sense to stay hidden.
Not just you, dear, on everybody. Something is fishy on Mercury, all right. Everyone's whistling a different tuna, and they're all red herrings. I have a feeling you know more than you're telling.
I don't know what you're talking about, Martine said coldly. But that's not surprising. You're not rational, and you need help.
She started to back away.
Perhaps,
Jacob nodded seriously. But maybe you will need help explaining your presence here today.
Martine stiffened.
I got my key from Duane Kepler. What about you?
Did you get the key with his knowledge? Martine blushed and didn't answer. There are several data spools missing from the collection taken last dive, all covering the period when Bubba Cub did his trick with the Lathani relic. You wouldn't happen to know where they are, would you?
Martine stared at Jacob.
You're kidding. But who... No.
She shook her head slowly, confused.
Did you take them?
No.
Then who did?
I don't know. How should I know? What business have you questioning?
I could call Helene da Silva right now,
Jacob rumbled ominously.
I could have just arrived to find this door open with you inside, and the key with your prints on it in your pouch. She'd search and find the spools missing, and there you'd be. You've been covering for someone, and I have some independent evidence who. If you don't come out with all you know right now, I swear you're going to take the fall, with or without your friend. You know as well as I that the crew at this base is just itching for someone to burn.
Martine wavered. Her hand went to her head.
I don't know.
Jacob maneuvered her into a chair. Then he closed and locked the door.
Hey, take it easy, a part of him said. He closed his eyes for a moment and counted to 10. Slowly, a brutal itch in Jacob's hands ebbed.
Martine held her face in her hands. Jacob caught a glimpse of Donaldson peeking around the darkroom door. He jerked his hand, and the chief engineer's head darted out of sight. Jacob pulled open the filing cabinet the woman had been examining.
Aha, here it is.
He picked up the steno camera and carried it back to the bench, plugged the readout jack into one of the viewers, and turned both machines on. Most of the material was quite uninteresting. Laroque's notes on events between the landing on Mercury and the morning that he took the camera to the Sunship Cavern, just before the fateful tour of Jeffrey's ship. Jacob ignored the audio portion. Laroque tended to be even more wordy in leaving notes to himself than he was in his published prose. But suddenly the character of the visual portion changed, just after a panorama shot of the exterior of the Sunship. For a moment he was puzzled as the pictures moved past. Then he laughed out loud. Millie Martine was so surprised by this that she raised her red eyes from her misery. Jacob nodded to her genially.
Did you know what you were fetching down here? Yes.
Her voice was husky. She nodded slowly.
I wanted to get Peter's camera back to him so he could write up his story. I thought that after the Solarians had been so cruel to him, using him so...
He's still in confinement, isn't he?
Yes, they figured it safest that way. The Solarians manipulated him once before, you see. They could do it again.
And whose idea was it to return his camera?
His, of course. He wanted the recordings, and I didn't think it would hurt.
To let him get his hands on a weapon?
No. The stunner would be put out of commission. Bub...
Her eyes widened and her voice trailed off.
Go ahead and say it. I already know.
Martine lowered her gaze.
Bubba Cub said he'd meet me at Peter's quarters and put the stunner out of commission. As a favor... and to prove he had no hard feelings.
Jacob sighed.
That tears it, he muttered.
What?
Let me see your hands.
He motioned peremptorily when she hesitated. The long, slender fingers trembled as he examined them.
What is it?
Jacob ignored her. He paced slowly up and back down the narrow room. The symmetry of the trap appealed to him.
If it carried through, there wouldn't be a human left on Mercury with an unsullied reputation. He couldn't have done better himself. The only question now was, when was it supposed to be sprung? He turned and looked back at the darkroom entrance. Again, Donaldson's head flicked back out of sight.
"It's all right, Chief. Come on out. You're going to have to help Dr. Martine clean this place of her fingerprints."
Martine gasped as the portly chief engineer emerged, smiling sheepishly.
"What are you going to do?"
he asked. Instead of answering, Jacob picked up the voice phone by the inner door and dialed.
"Hello, Fagin?
Yes, I'm ready for a parlor scene now."
"Oh, yeah?
Well, don't be so sure yet. It will depend on how lucky I can get in the next few minutes. Would you please invite the core group down to LaRocque's detention quarters for a meeting in 5 minutes?"
"Yes, right away. And please insist. Don't bother with Dr. Martine. She's right here."
Martine looked up from wiping the handle of a filing cabinet, amazed by the tone of Jacob Demois's voice.
"That's right," Jacob went on. "And please invite Bubba Cub first, and Kepler as well. Get them moving the way we both know you can. I'll have to run as it is."
"Yeah, thanks."
"So, now what?"
Donaldson said on their way out the door.
"Now, you two apprentices graduate to first-class burglarhood. And you've got to make it snappy. Dr. Kepler will be leaving his room shortly, and you'd better not be too long following him to the meeting."
Martine stopped in her tracks.
"You're kidding. You don't seriously expect me to help ransack Duane's apartment?"
"Why not?" Donaldson growled. "You've been giving him rat poison. You stole his keys to break into the photo lab."
Martine's nostrils flared.
"I have not been giving him rat poison. Who told you that?"
Jacob sighed. "Warfarin. It was used as a rat poison in the old days, before the rats got immune to it, and nearly everything else."
"I told you before. I never heard of warfarin. First the doctor, and then you on the sunship. Why does everybody think I'm a poisoner?"
"I don't. But I do think that you'd better cooperate if you want to help us get to the bottom of this. Now, you've got the keys to Kepler's rooms, right?"
Martine bit her lip, then nodded once. Jacob told Donaldson what to look for and what to do with it when he found it. Then he was off, running in the direction of the E.T. quarters.
Chapter 19 In the Parlor.
"You mean Jacob called this meeting, and he isn't even here?"
Helene da Silva asked from the doorway.
"I should not be concerned, Commandant da Silva. He shall arrive. I have never known Mr. Demois to call a meeting that was not well worth the time of attending."
"Indeed," LaRocque laughed from one end of the large sofa, with his feet propped up on an ottoman. He spoke sarcastically around the stem of his pipe, and through a haze of smoke.
"And why not? What else have we to do here? The research is over, and the studies are done. The ivory tower has collapsed in arrogance, and it is the month of the long knives. Let Demois take his time. Whatever he has to say will be more amusing than watching all these serious faces."
Duane Kepler grimaced from the other end of the sofa. He sat as far from LaRocque as he possibly could. Nervously, he twitched aside the lap blanket a med-aide had just finished adjusting. The med-aide looked up to the physician, who just shrugged.
"Shut up, LaRocque," Kepler said.
LaRocque merely grinned and took out a tool to work on his pipe.
"I still think I should have a recording device. Knowing Demois, this may be historic."
Bubba Cub snorted and turned away. He had been pacing. Uncharacteristically, he hadn't gone near any of the cushions scattered around the carpeted room. The pill stopped in front of Culla, standing by the wall, and clicked his quadrilaterally symmetric fingers in a complicated pattern. Culla nodded.
"I am instructed to say that enough tragedy has occurred because of Mr. Larocque's recording devices. Also, Pil Bubba Cub has indicated that he will not remain past another 5 minutes."
Kepler ignored the statement. Methodically, he rubbed his neck, as if searching for an itch. A lot of the fleshiness had departed in recent weeks. Larocque raised his shoulders once in a Gallic shrug. Fagin was silent. Not even the silvery chimes moved at the ends of his blue-green branches. "Come on in and sit down, Helene," the physician said. "I'm sure the others will be here soon." With his eyes, he commiserated. Walking into this room was like wading into a pool of very cold and not very clean water. She found a seat as far from the others as possible. Unhappily, she wondered what Jacob Demois was up to. "I hope it's not the same thing," she thought. "If this group in here has anything in common, it's the fact that they don't even want the word sundiver mentioned. They're just on the edge of tearing each other's throats out. But all the same, there's this conspiracy of silence." She shook her head. "I'm glad this tour is over soon. Maybe things will be better in another 50 years. She didn't hold out much hope for that. Already the only place you could hear a Beatles tune performed was by a symphony orchestra of all the monstrosities. And good jazz didn't exist outside of a library. Why did I ever leave home? Mildred Martine and Chief Donaldson entered. To Helene, their attempts to look nonchalant were pathetic, but no one else seemed to notice. Interesting. I wonder what those two have in common. They looked around the room and then edged toward a corner behind the only sofa where Kepler and Larocque and the tension between them occupied all of the space. Larocque looked up at Martine and smiled. Was that a conspiratorial wink? Martine avoided his eye and Larocque looked disappointed. He returned to lighting his pipe.
"I have had enough,"
Bubba Cub announced finally, and he turned for the door. But before he got there, it swung open, apparently on its own. Then Jacob Demois appeared in the doorway, a white canvas sack over his shoulder. He entered the room whistling softly. Helene blinked unbelievingly. The tune sounded awfully like Santa Claus is Coming to Town. But surely... Jacob swung the bag into the air. It came down on the coffee table with a bang that made Dr. Martine jump halfway out of her chair. Kepler's frown deepened, and he gripped the arm of the sofa. Helene couldn't help it. The anachronistic, homely old tune, the loud noise, and Jacob's demeanor broke the wall of tension like a custard pie in the face of someone you didn't particularly like. She laughed. Jacob winked once.
"Ho, ho!
Are you here to play?" Bubba Cub demanded. "You steal my time. Compensate."
Jacob smiled.
"Why, certainly, Pil Bubba Cub. I hope that you will be edified by my demonstration. But first, would you please be seated?"
Bubba Cub's jaws snapped together. The small black eyes seemed to burn for a moment. Then he snorted and threw himself onto a nearby cushion. Jacob studied the faces in the room. The expressions were mostly confused or hostile, except for Larocque, who remained pompously aloof, and Helene, who smiled uncertainly. And Fagin, of course. For the 1,000th time, he wished the Canton had eyes. "When Dr. Kepler invited me to Mercury," he began, "I had some doubts about the Sundiver project, but approved of the idea overall. After that first meeting,
I expected to become involved in one of the most exciting events since contact, a complex problem of interspecies relations with our nearest and strangest neighbors, the Sun Ghosts. Instead, the problem of the Solarian seems to have taken back burner to a complicated web of interstellar intrigue and murder. Kepler looked up sadly.
Jacob, please, we all know you've been under a strain. Millie thinks we should be kind to you, and I agree. But there are limits.
Jacob spread his hands. If kindness is humoring me, then please do so. I'm sick of being ignored. If you don't listen, I'm sure the Earth authorities will. Kepler's smile froze. He sat back.
Go ahead, then. I'll listen.
Jacob stepped onto the broad throw rug in the center of the room. First, Pierre Larocq has consistently denied killing Chimp Jeffrey, or using his stunner to sabotage the smaller Sunship. He denies having ever been a probationer and claims that the records on Earth have somehow been fouled up. Yet since our return from the Sun, he has consistently refused to take a P-test, which might go a long way toward proving his innocence. Presumably, he expects that the results of the test would also be falsified.
That's right, Larocq nodded. Just another lie.
Even if Physician Laird, Dr. Martine, and I jointly supervised? Larocq grunted.
It might prejudice my trial, especially if I decide to sue.
Why go to trial? You had no motive to kill Jeffrey when you opened the access plate to the RQ tuner.
Which I deny doing.
And only a probie would kill a man in a fit of pique. So why stay in detention? Maybe he's comfortable here, the med-aide commented. Helene frowned. Discipline had gone straight to hell lately, along with morale.
He refuses the test because he knows he'll fail, Kepler shouted.
That is why the Sun Men chose him to do their killing, Bubba Cub added. That is what they told me.
And am I a probationer? Some people seem to think the ghosts made me try to commit suicide.
You were under stress. Dr. Martin says so. Yes?
Bubba Cub turned to Martine. Her hands gripped each other whitely, but she said nothing. We'll get to that in a few minutes, Jacob said. But before we start, I'd like to have a private word with Dr. Kepler and Mr. Larocq. Dr. Laird and his assistant moved away politely. Bubba Cub glared at being forced to move, but followed suit. Jacob passed around the back of the sofa. As he bent over between the two men, his hand went behind his back. Donaldson leaned forward and placed a small object there, which Jacob held tightly. Jacob looked alternately at Kepler and Larocq. I think you two should cut it out, especially you, Dr. Kepler. Kepler hissed.
What in God's name are you talking about?
I think you have some property of Mr. Larocq's. No matter that he got it illegally, he wants it badly. Badly enough to temporarily take a rap he knows won't stick. Maybe enough to change the tone of the articles he's certain to write about all this. I don't think the deal will hold anymore. You see, I have the item now.
My camera!
Larocq whispered harshly. His eyes shone. Quite a little camera, too. A complete little sonic spectrograph. Yes, I have it. I also have the copies of recordings you made that were hidden in Dr. Kepler's rooms.
You traitor, Kepler stammered. I thought you were a friend. Shut up, you skinny bastard,
Larocq almost shouted.
You are the one who is a traitor.
Contempt seemed to boil from the little writer like steam over long contained. Jacob laid a hand on the back of each man. Both of you will be on no-return orbits if you don't keep your voices down. Larocq can be charged with espionage,
and Kepler for blackmail and complicity after the fact in espionage. In fact, since the evidence of Laroque's espionage is also circumstantial evidence that he wouldn't have had time to sabotage Jeffrey's ship, the immediate suspicion would fall on the last person to inspect the ship's generators. Oh, I don't think you did it, Dr. Kepler, but I'd be careful if I were you. Laroque fell silent. Kepler chewed on the end of his mustache.
What do you want?
He said finally. Jacob tried to resist, but the suppressed side was now too much awake. He couldn't help making a little dig. Why, I'm not sure yet. Maybe I'll think of something. Just don't let your imagination go wild. Friends of mine on Earth know everything by now. It wasn't true, but Mr. Hyde did believe in caution. Helene da Silva strained to overhear what the three men were saying to each other. If she had been one to believe in possession, she would have been sure the familiar faces were moving at the command of invading spirits. Gentle Dr. Kepler turned taciturn and secretive since their return from the sun, muttered like a wrathful sage denied his will. Laroque, thoughtful, cautious, behaved as if his whole world hinged on a careful assessment of affairs. And Jacob Demois, earlier glimpses hinted at a charisma beneath his quiet, sometimes watery thoughtfulness. It had drawn her even as it frustrated in its peekaboo appearances. But now it radiated. It compelled like a flame. Jacob stood straight and announced,
"For now, Dr. Kepler has kindly agreed to drop all charges against Pierre Laroque."
Bubba Cub rose from his cushion.
"You are mad. If humans condone the killing of their clients, that is their own problem. But the Sun Men may bend him to do harm again."
"The Sun Men never bent him to do anything," Jacob said slowly. Bubba Cub snapped.
"As I said, you are mad. I spoke with the Sun Men. They did not lie."
"If you wish," Jacob bowed. "But I still would like to continue with my synopsis." Bubba Cub snorted loudly and threw himself on the cushion.
"Mad!"
he snapped. "First," Jacob said, "I would like to thank Dr. Kepler for his gracious permission for Chief Donaldson and Dr. Martine and myself to visit the photo labs and study the films from the last dive." At the mention of Martine's name, Bubba Cub's expression changed. So that's what chagrin looks like on a pill, Jacob thought. He empathized with the little alien. It had been a beautiful trap, now entirely diffused. Jacob told an edited version of their discovery in the photo lab, that the flip side spools of the last third of the mission were missing. The only other sound in the room was the tinkling of Fagin's branches. "For a while I wondered where these spools could be. I had an idea who took them, but whether he had destroyed them or taken the chance of hiding them, I wasn't sure. Finally, I decided to gamble that a data pack rat never throws anything away. I searched a certain Sofont's quarters and found the missing spools."
"You dared," Bubba Cub hissed. "If you had proper masters, I would have you nerve-whipped. You dared."
Helene shook away her surprise.
"You mean you admit that you hid Sundiver data tapes, Peel Bubba Cub? Why?"
Jacob grinned. "Oh, that will become clear. In fact, the way this case was going, I thought for sure it would be more complicated than it is. But it's actually quite simple. You see, these tapes make it very clear that Peel Bubba Cub has lied." A low rumbling rose in Bubba Cub's throat. The little alien stood very still, as if he didn't trust himself to move.
"Well, where are the tapes?"
De Silva demanded. Jacob picked up the sack from the table.
I've got to give the devil his due, though. It was only luck that I figured the spools would just fit into an empty gas canister.
He pulled out an object and held it up.
The Lathani relic,
De Silva gasped. A small trill of surprise escaped Fagin. Mildred Martine stood up, her hand brought to her throat.
Yes, the Lathani relic. I'm sure Bubba Cub counted on a reaction like yours, on the obscure chance that his rooms were searched. Naturally, no one would think of disturbing a semi-religious object of reverence of an old and powerful race, particularly one that looked like nothing but a slab of meteoric rock and glass. He turned it over in his hands. Now watch. The relic opened with a twist. A can of some sort was embedded in one of the halves. Jacob laid the other half down and tugged at the end of the can. Something inside rattled softly. The can suddenly came loose, and a dozen small black objects came rolling out and fell to the floor. Cullas, mashies clacked.
The spools!
Laroque nodded with satisfaction as he fumbled with his pipe.
Yes, Jacob said. And on the outer surface of this relic, you can find the button which released the previous contents of this now-empty canister. There appear to be some traces left inside. I'll bet anything that they match the substance that Chief Donaldson and I gave Dr. Kepler yesterday when we failed to convince...
Jacob stopped himself. Then he shrugged.
Traces of an unstable monomolecule, which under a certain Sofont's skillful control spread out in a burst of light and sound to coat the inner surface of the upper hemisphere of the shell of the sunship.
De Silva rose to her feet. Jacob had to speak louder to overcome the rising chatter coming from Kulla.
And to effectively block out all green and blue light, the only wavelengths in which we could pick out the sun ghosts from their surroundings.
The spools, De Silva cried. They should show...
They do show toroids, ghosts, hundreds of them. Interestingly, there were no anthropoid shapes, but perhaps they didn't make them because our psi patterns indicated we weren't seeing them. But oh, the confusion in that herd when we blundered right into them without so much as a by your leave. Toroids and normal ghosts scattering out of our path. All because we couldn't see that we were right in the middle of them.
You crazy E.T.!
Laroque shouted. He shook his fist at Bubba Cub. The pill hissed back, but remained still, the fingers of each hand flexing against one another as he watched Jacob.
The monomolecule was designed to decay, just as we were leaving the chromosphere. It slumped in a thin layer of dust on the force field at the rim of the deck, where no one would notice it until Bubba Cub could return with Kulla and vacuum it up.
That's right, isn't it, Kulla?
Kulla nodded miserably.
Jacob felt distantly pleased that sympathy came as easily as amoral wrath had earlier. A part of him had begun to get worried. He smiled reassuringly.
That's okay, Kulla. I have no evidence to connect you with anything else. I watched the two of you when you did it, and it was pretty clear you were under duress.
The Pring's eyes rose. They were very bright. He nodded once again, and the chattering from behind the thick lips subsided slowly. Fagin moved closer to the slender E.T.
Donaldson rose from picking up the recording spools.
I think we'd better make some provisions for custody.
Helene had already moved to the telephone.
I'm taking care of that now, she said softly.
Martine sidled up to Jacob and whispered,
Jacob, this is an external affairs matter now. We should let them handle it from here.
Jacob shook his head.
No, not just yet. There's a bit more that needs out. Da Silva put down the phone.
They'll be here shortly. Meanwhile, why don't you go on, Jacob? Is there more?
Yes, two items. One is this. From the bag on the table, he pulled Bubba Cub's Psi helmet. I suggest this be kept in storage. I don't know if anyone else remembers, but Bubba Cub was wearing it and staring at me when I warped out aboard the Sunship. Being made to do things makes me mad, Bubba Cub. You shouldn't have done it. Bubba Cub made a gesture with his hand that Jacob didn't try to interpret. Finally, there's the matter of the death of chimpanzee Jeffrey. Actually, it's the easiest part. Bubba Cub knew almost everything there was to know about the galactic technology in Sundiver. The drives, the computer system, the communications, aspects which Terran scientists haven't even scratched. It's only circumstantial evidence that Bubba Cub was working on the laser communications pylon, spurning Dr. Kepler's presentation, when Jeff's largely remote-controlled ship blew up. They wouldn't convict in a court of law, but that doesn't matter, since Pila have extraterritoriality, and all we can do is deport him. Another thing that'd be hard to prove would be the hypothesis that Bubba Cub planted a false lead in the space identification system, a system linked directly to the library at La Paz, creating a false report that LaRocque was a probationer. Still, it's pretty clear that he did. It was a perfect red herring. With everyone sure that LaRocque did it, nobody bothered to really do a detailed double-check on the telemetry of Jeff's dive. Right now, I recall that Jeff's ship went into trouble almost exactly when he turned on his close-up cameras. A perfect delayed trigger, if that was the technique Bubba Cub used. Anyway, we'll probably never know. The telemetry is probably missing or destroyed by now.
Fagin fluted. Jacob, Kulla asks that you stop. Please do not embarrass Pil Bubba Cub any further. It would serve no purpose.
Three armed crewmen appeared at the door. They looked at Commandant Da Silva expectantly. She motioned for them to wait. Just a moment, Jacob said. We haven't dealt with the most important part, Bubba Cub's motives. Why would an important sofunt, a representative of a prestigious